Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in session for some good term.
Good morning. Be seated, please. First case on our calendar is 99-450-99-926. Charles and Elizabeth Christie versus PMS Management Company, Mr. Greenberger.
Make any difference whether they're damages or costs for purposes of assessment, because the court under the rules has a right to assess it to either party or both.
I think there's two differences with a distinction, unless it's distinctions with a difference. The first is, in the posture of this case, I argue it must be costs, because as an advocate, I was trying to prevent them from being awarded, and I knew that the time at last, and the jurisdiction would repose solely in the Court of Appeals. But might I suggest that in a different posture, it was Judge Krenzler who aptly stated, makes it easier at trial on a commercial lease, where attorney's fees are awardable, you permit. It's not part of your case in chief. Keep the jury away from it. Please, that's an excellent question, which also needs to be mentioned, I think, in this opinion. The difference then is, in our posture, well after the Court of Appeals issued its judgment, I think it was on or about 30 days thereafter, but that's not part of my argument, that the appeal of the appeal was still possible. In our posture, I read the appellate decision. They all come out the same way, either reasonable grounds or not. I think it's a Nolan case from Cincinnati, I should say that, Hamilton County, that said that statement, reasonable grounds, precludes an award of attorney's fees. Now, I've argued that, but I'm here to be intellectually honest. I don't know that that's always the case. You might make a nice argument in the Court of Appeals, but the tenant still needs their money.
Have you answered my question?
I believe so.
Okay, well, then I guess it just escaped me.
Let me try
it. Because I can understand whether it's the jury or the judge assessing.
That's for damages.
Okay. And it's the judge who has to do it for cost. It's the jury who does it for damages. Okay?
Yes.
All right. But the judge can assess it as damages, too. What's a requirement that for this, a determination of attorney's fees that anybody has to do it?
And in response to that, hopefully I do directly respond, in our posture, I was reading the appellate rules, and I wanted it to be labeled as costs, because the exclusive jurisdiction to determine appellate costs, their appellate courts aren't determining damages. That jurisdiction is reposed by Appellate Rule 24, I believe, in the Court of Appeals. And the modification I suggest is, and any attorney's fees designated as cost by a statute.
That's a different issue than what we're talking about. Now you're talking about who can assess them. I want to know.
And that's the answer to your question, though. If they're damages, the Court of Appeals can award them in any event, because res judicata, the case is over, finality versus perfection.
Yeah, I saw you argued that, except that all you do in the Court of Appeals, and I've done it 25, 50 times if I did it once when I was in the Court of Appeals, you remand it back to the trial court to assess the cost.
Well,
Or else you assess the cost yourself. Or if there's the attorney's fees, you remand it back to determine the attorney's fees.
And I agree to an extent. In fact, I suggested, I think in my memo in support of jurisdiction, remand back a master or otherwise. I ask, as opposed to arguing, can an appellate court refer its jurisdiction to another court, not to a master, to make any determination, because you know if I put color in, excuse my humor here, the colored paper I marked my exhibits in the mandamus I filed this morning, you know that it doesn't belong here. Does the appellate court know that it doesn't? You know what is the proper argument in framing arguments. And with all due respect, trial judges, before whom I appear, certainly, are they qualified by the electorate, and therefore by their position, to make that determination by a referral?
Let's try it a different way. I've decided I want to call these costs, and you ought to pay them for putting these people through it. Is that good enough?
As the Supreme Court?
Uh-huh.
No.
Okay. Now I want to call them damages. Does it make any difference?
Not. Certainly not. The trier of fact determines damages. The trier of law should determine costs.
That's your only distinction.
Well, aren't damages are compensation for injury that someone has received. Are they not in the civil action?
Well, certainly it's a part of the common law for the proper litigation.
And costs are, we say costs are not damages because costs are what one has to pay to get access to the court system to have a dispute resolved.
Isn't the American that, rule.
And attorney's fees are considered not to be arising out, they're not a damage, they're not an injury that I suffered because someone ran into me. They're
a great
cost because they're a part of what it costs to access the justice system. So they're costs. So if that's pretty well settled, it seems to me. It seems to me the dissent here has it right on whether these are costs or damage. Your other argument seems to me is that your basic argument that I thought was the answer to what Justice Douglas was asking is that, number one, why should a court of appeals ask a trial court to tell it and the parties what appropriate attorney's fees are for arguing and appealing a case to the Court of Appeals?
That's what Rule 23 said.
Right. The Court of Appeals should not be sending a case back to the trial court to say, well, these costs now are, we're going to call them damages, so that the trial court can determine what the attorney's fees are. Isn't
that? I briefly comment so that I can reserve my time. I have
sure.
No problem with a remand. The appellate courts have enough to do. The trial courts are geared to try issues such as that. But there needs to be guidelines announced by the Court of Appeals on the remand.
I thought this was a 60B.
Exactly.
Okay.
And what was I doing there on a 60B?
But the 60B was a procedural issue in the Court of Appeals, whether or not 60B would work for the getting the
exactly. There was no jurisdiction for anything in the trial court at that time.
Well,
the little hearing I left, I pulled out because whatever opinion I got seemed to be different than every other opinion, including the GMO opinion, which of course is limited to 02, 5321-02. But you also have case law that says they're traditionally costs. And I didn't write about Rule 24.
It's 23.
If the
Court of Appeals in this case was asked to decide whether the award of additional damages under 60B was appropriate, if it's damages, it is. If it's cost, it isn't.
60B is appropriate for damages, but
right.
Not in this case because one bite of the apple had been taken.
Well, that's a whole other argument.
Followed.
I know. You say that wasn't right. The Court of Appeals said it was.
Right. First case that won. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenberger. Mr. Tullis.
May it please the Court. My name is Ken Tullis. I represent the appellees Charles and Mrs. Christie. Justice Cook, I believe you hit the nail right on the head. If you look at this as damages, then the 60B was proper. if you look at the issue of attorney fees as costs, then admittedly, the 60B is not. When the Court of Appeals ruled in my client's favor, I was put in a somewhat difficult predicament. I was familiar with the case law and the conflict between the jurisdictions. The Ninth District has said twice already, and the second time, it was more about, we told you before, attorney fees are damages, not costs. I've argued this issue in trial courts just the opposite, because frankly, it makes it easier if attorney fees are costs.
Sure.
The court can assess them after the trial. You don't have to worry about bifurcating the trial to separate out that issue. If you're before a jury, it's a very untenable position to argue the fees before you've won the case.
But typically, under the American rule, we don't award fees as costs. That's the argument on the other side, that fees, this is statutory, you get fees, arguably, because it's part of the damages. It's not at the end of the case, it's, if you win, you get this, the amount you're out, plus your attorney's fees.
Correct, and that's the whole issue. Are attorney fees damages or costs?
They're statutorily authorized.
Right.
For certain causes of action.
Correct. And this particular statute doesn't absolutely clarify it, unlike some other statutes. If you look at the way 5321.16 is written, it says damages in an amount equal to the amount wrongfully withheld and reasonable attorney fees. So that. And attorney fees as part of the damages, I don't know how you separate that out. The Ninth District has said they're damages. So I did what I thought was right, and I went back and filed a 60B because I couldn't ask the Ninth District to tax them as cost. They were going to tell me what they told the two previous litigants. We've already told you. They're damages. So I did that which the Ninth District appeared to have directed me to do, and in a 2-1 decision still directed me to do. Interestingly, Judge Carr, recently moved up to the Ninth District, felt differently, which places me in an untenable position again. What do I do with the attorney fees from now? This was actually the third appeal in that case. I couldn't, still with a 2-1 majority decision, I couldn't then file another motion for attorney fees having prevailed in that case. But the fact is, my clients would be out of pocket paying me if they're not awarded their statutory attorney fees.
You're going to ask for attorney fees for being up here? And are they damages or costs? And who awards them?
Well, if they're... That's an interesting issue, and I've pondered that. If this court affirms, then, and holds that they're damages, which I would ask this court to do, because frankly, it benefits me, I'm then in a position where I can go back and ask for additional damages. And I believe some way to do that is a 60B, if you hold that they're damages. Now, as their cost, the position, then I suppose I go back to the Court of Appeals and say, listen, there's been a change in the law. Let me file my motion for cost pursuant to Appeal Rule 24 based on the change in the law. But I couldn't ask them for cost at the time because they said they're not cost.
You think under 5321.16, the attorney's fee language requires a jury to determine if it's damages?
I don't think that at all.
A court can assess the attorney's fees, can't it?
I would never want to try attorney fees before a jury. What I would do is ask the trial court to bifurcate that issue because I believe attorney fees are something appropriate for a judge to hear, not a jury. I suppose you can have a jury here. It's just not something that I'm comfortable with. The issue of res judicata, I think, simply is incorrect. You can't decide appellate attorney fees before the appeal has been had and prevailed upon. There's nothing to decide in the trial court. The trial court ruled on all of the issues which were before it, but they couldn't rule on something in the future. And the Court of Appeals, the Ninth District, squarely addressed that. So I don't think it's very true to that issue at all. What we're really dealing with is a procedural issue. To whom do you ask for the attorney fees? Now, there is, I suppose, a bit of a side issue. Can attorney fees be awarded for prevailing on an appeal? And I think the answer to that is yes. A case that I cited in my brief, and granted is unreported, the decision out of Lucas County, the Grail versus Williamsburg Estate, squarely addresses that and said that yes, you can get attorney fees on appeal. And I believe there's good reasoning. The statute is set up so that the tenants can seek redress from their landlord. Prior to having these remedies of double damages and attorney fees, the landlord had absolute control over the tenant security fund. They got the money when the tenant signed up. The landlord sets forth the terms. You want to rent from us? This is what you pay us. This is how much you can profit with. It's not negotiable by the tenant. You want to live here. This is what you pay. When you move out, you want your money back. We're not going to give it to you. What are you going to do about it? My client had a security deposit of $299. What lawyer in their right mind would take on a case over $299, presumably on a contingency fee, and be here in the Iowa Supreme Court 4 years later? And what client is going to pay them on an hourly basis to do it? But the fact is, if the statute didn't provide for attorney fees, this case would have never made it this far. The landlord would have kept their deposit.
Should we, if we understand the theory behind the statute, including attorney's fees, as what? Damages or costs? If we think of it in terms of the cost of doing a case, fees associated with any case, we'd have lots of cases where the fees are costs, and the various statutes say, you know, the courts award costs, and yet those would rarely include attorney's fees, would they? Most cases don't.
Most cases don't, because the American rule says that they don't. This is an exception to the American rule where you have a statutory provision for attorney fees.
Does that argue for calling them damages?
I believe it argues for calling them damages, because they are actual damages. I mean, face it, contingency fees aside, and let's say there wasn't a provision for attorney fees in this case. I'm going to send a bill to my clients, and they're going to owe me on an hourly basis. So they're going to write a check. That's not a cost. That's a damage. They're out of pocket.
But that's an argument against all the law that says that attorney's fees are costs. You're attacking the very premise of a lot of law. Why do that? Why wouldn't you just argue that the statute says any actual damages together with reasonable attorney fees, it is ambiguous. Certainly it could have been written a lot more clearly. But here we are with the word of the legislature, and we have to interpret them. Why would we not, if there is ambiguity, why would we not interpret the statute consistent with the body of law that says attorney's fees are costs, rather than trying to make some exception here for this statute?
Well, I think the body of law that's out there and is not entirely clear as to whether attorney fees are damages or costs, but the law that's interpreting that, or the cases I found interpreting that, specific statutes. And when you say a well-established body of law, and granted, there are several appellate jurisdictions that have taken some wording and says you can award attorney fees as cost, and that has been read in as dicta to then say that law. I'm not convinced that applies to every statute. You have certain statutes that say attorney fees as cost, and so, yeah, it's okay in cases like that to say that's the law, because you've taken it out of the statute. But the case law that addresses that, I believe, has played upon some of those statutes that specifically said that attorney fees are costs. And this statute doesn't say that. And I don't know that you can interpret that upon the legislature. I think more towards the legislative intent is to compensate, and maybe, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm not so addressing your issue squarely, but I think the legislature wanted to compensate the tenants for damages. I really believe it's a damage, because in order for them, they're damaged, one, by having their security deposit wrongfully withheld. And if they want to get it back, you know, let's say they come into my office and I say, I need a $500 repair for a $299 deposit, and they pay me. That's a damage. You call it a cost or not.
Well, but why does it doesn't make any difference to the tenant whether it's cost or damages if a court decides here's what you're entitled to because you had to get your deposit back? Is it? I mean, I don't think we should be changing the law for one case, because here this is a little different factor, obviously different than we usually see. Why should we change the whole concept of damages and cost for one case.
I don't think you're changing it, though. I don't think that issue has been squarely addressed by this court. I wish it were, because maybe we wouldn't be here.
I think your argument is, I think, that the issue of whether attorney's fees or costs or damages is an open question.
It's an open question. I guess my argument is somewhat self-serving, because if you hold their costs, I don't know how I can in good faith make an argument for additional attorney fees for coming here or for the third appeal. So perhaps it's somewhat self-serving to persevere in the Ninth District's holdings. But truly, when you think of it, and my analogy is, what would my client call it? And if they can't, if their choice is between putting down that $500 retainer on a security deposit on a new place or paying me, and if they don't pay me, they're not going to get their deposit back. They're damaged.
Well, wonder what about the cases where courts always decide at the close of a case which party will pay the costs. And they sometimes say costs and fees, because it's quite often court reporter fees and things that are taxed as costs in the trial court. Yet, it's rarely, including, there are no attorney's fees awarded, but we'll use the term costs. It'll be difficult to know that it won't be attorney's fees also, huh?
I think that makes it simpler if you make that distinction that attorney fees are damages. You don't have to quibble over whether the cost includes fees. If you're saying what the cost, court reporter fees are good examples. Those are traditional things that you refer to as cost. But
the purpose of 16 is to make sure that a plaintiff whose security deposit has been wrongfully withheld is made whole.
Correct. And
okay, that's right. So, as Chief Justice says, does the client care when the client gets the attorney's fees reimbursed whether we call them damages or costs in our nice little profession?
Does the client in general care? Perhaps not.
Okay.
Does the client in this case care? Because it will have an outcome on this case.
Why?
This particular case, we've already had an award of attorney fees having prevailed on what was the second appeal of this case, and that's what these attorney fees
yes.
are about. So I believe that I can, in good faith, even if this court says that they're caught, I can go back to the Ninth District and say, let me file my motion for attorney fees and costs based on the change in the law. But what we have now is a third appeal that was taken from that. And if you affirm, then I've got some basis to go back and ask for additional damages.
The title has ramifications for procedure.
Yes.
Titling it one way or another sends people different places.
In this particular case, it's interesting. I think Judge Carr, in writing the concurring but dissenting opinion, if you want to call it that, hit it right on the head. She would affirm because the trial court followed the law that was set down and awarded additional attorney fees as damages. However, what she said is that in future cases, she would say that attorney fees should be classified as cost, therefore presumably should be asked for in the Court of Appeals.
And Judge Carr would distinguish between the cases where costs can include attorney's fees and cases where... But I mean, that would need to be made, wouldn't it? Most cases, the costs could not include fees.
That's correct. The costs wouldn't include fees unless you have the statutory exception.
Right.
Which you have here. And I don't know, Justice Cook, that distinction is so difficult to make. If you have a statutory basis for the fees, you're going to ask for them.
That's correct.
There are some procedural issues that come into play when you ask for them. And if they're costs, some of those procedural concerns don't necessarily exist.
Do we solve this problem if we interpret 5321.02b3 as where it says maybe cover action damages together with reasonable training? Do we solve it simply by calling the cost and saying you're entitled to them at every stage? You go to teleport, your cost, apply from there. And come here, their costs are collected. It doesn't matter whether it's a reasonable appeal or not. They are awardable purely for the act of filing.
I think they're awardable if you prevail, and if you have a meritorious argument. Do you solve the problem by calling them costs all the time? Honestly, it makes things easier.
But simply saying that at the level you are is where you get the cost. That the Court of Appeals, for example, has a duty to award you costs if you prevail there.
It makes a whole lot more sense.
A duty to award you costs if you prevail here because of the three that says you get here.
It makes a whole lot more sense to do it that way. Frankly, it makes it more difficult for me to get paid, but if it says the law is right, I can live with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kellis. Mr. Beaver, you saved a little over 6 minutes of your time.
Thank you. I think one statement might bring this, focus this issue. The weight of the case law holding that attorney's fees are costs is probably as it is because the court before which the costs arise is best suited to determine those costs. Now, again, a remand doesn't offend my sensibilities if there's some guidelines. You know if my brief was too verbose, if I stood here and made no sense, etc. And
since yeah. Now I understand that.
If you leave her both hands, I couldn't see her, etc.
It's funny.
The fact is that I agree because, again, I'm compelled to be intellectually honest, that a finding of reasonable cause for the appeal does not necessarily preclude, although I think the law to date says it does, an award. My appeal not to be cogent. It could make sense.
We're making this more difficult than it is. If we interpret the statute to say that attorney's fees under this statute are costs, doesn't that mean, it means the Ninth District is wrong in their statement of the law, doesn't it mean then that the tenant can request the Ninth Circuit to award his client attorney's fees for the appeal in the Ninth Circuit and their Ninth District and can also then apply here for attorney's fees for the appeal here?
Yes.
The statute authorizes.
I have no doubt that if it's done, journalism students here, who, what, when, where, and how. Tell them when and tell them how, and they can get them through this appeal. I have no problem with that. Tell them when and tell them how for the appellate, the court below, it's too late. It was too late.
Tell me why it's too late.
If you review the record, the first approach to the trial court wasn't by 60B. I suggest that the only way to get back in a trial court is 60B because the good attorneys should make sure the court and the opponents have their day in court. Now we come to the 60B. And
he didn't go to the Ninth District because their law was we aren't going to give you damages. We can't give you damages. So we say you're wrong. Ninth District. Now you are, the tenant is entitled to come to you for the attorney's fees that were expended in your court. What's wrong with that?
No, I suggest that the procedure was incorrect, and if I could reserve one moment at the end of Appellate Rule 24, I suggest that if you appropriately say their costs on appeal, which they should be, if that's what the people across the street wanted to be, I have no problem. I have no problem with a proper approach to this court for fees. The problem is that the trial court, my response was, these are costs, you don't have jurisdiction. And I rationalized why they're not damages. Now, the trial judge, right or wrong, whatever the motivation, said no damages, but that I can do. I must have convinced them he couldn't award appellate costs. Now the appellate court is affirming damages, the right to get costs long since passed. I mean, in a trial, when I get a verdict, there's got to be a deadline sometime. So, are they alive in this court? Absolutely. I have no problem with that. But let me suggest that while across the street, and I'm not objecting to liberalism, liberally allowing litigants the exception, the statutory exceptions to the American rule, has to put in some kind of, if that's the stimulus, the response has to be Appellate Rule 24, for example. It defines all sorts of costs that we all generally know are costs. But putting a little phrase in them, and attorney's fees are statutorily awarded costs. And
I've seen great opinions come from this court. I think it was Rule 58 or 54 about that. Before you amended the rule, there was a great decision I recall by a justice who just poked a little fun at me. But we as practitioners knew what to do the moment that opinion came out. Because we're out here, I have compassion. What does my opponent mechanically do? Sometimes we have to interpolate between two points, and your rules can't go on forever. But might I suggest, the genesis of this entire case, the genesis, was in its report, the original case has a reported opinion. I did not object to non-conforming 56D evidence. See, the rule says it shall conform. And there's case laws, I can sit back and do nothing. Well, I guess I can. And humorously, all my adversaries now go, why do you put in your motion before I can respond to it? I'm not going to stand for any non-56D evidence. You see, you can't write a rule that goes on 20 pages. But what you must do, please, if you can, at least in this opinion, if you don't articulate the rule, let us, my opponent also, know mechanically what to do today.
Okay. And that score, supposing I'm going to write the opinion, and supposing I say, if I were doing that, one, the law to this point has been confused between the districts, or there's some state of confusion. We now hold that the levying of attorney's fees are costs. Two, under 5321. Two, we remand this matter to the trial court to assess attorney's fees as costs and award them to the plaintiff. Three, we also remand it to the appellate court for the appellate court to determine the appellate attorney's fees. And we invite the plaintiff to submit a documented bill here in the Supreme Court so we can assess costs too.
Steps two and three have a problem. The trial court's fees were awarded already. There were people.
Yeah, okay.
The appellate court, someone nodded and I forgot. The appellate court, I'm sorry, with all the respect to my adversary and this panel, to the extent they disagree with me, that bite of the apple wasn't taken. But we invoke what humorously is known as the Noogie's Doctrine. Up Noogie's, you can't do it.
Yeah, I understand all that, but the theory is that the law was in the state of flux. And so now we're starting from square one, and with this case, these three steps should take place. Why would that be wrong?
Yeah.
No, with this case.
I would strenuously suggest to you that you are incorrect. The Court of Appeals has the jurisdiction if you come to us in time. You're extending, in essence, a statute of limitations.
But the Court of Appeals was wrong, as Chief Justice points out, if we reverse.
No, it's not their opinion that he's getting calls for. It's the first appeal. I think that's the confusion. With all respect, the appeal of the non-56C conforming evidence, the real merit of this real case, that case, they affirm. Now if he went to get fees in the trial court for that first appeal, then I am here because the second time the appellate court saw it, it affirmed the attorney's fees for it, awarded by the trial court. So that bite of the apple is not available anymore.
No, but what about the bite of the apple? I think we're not communicating. We need to understand what this is case, what your argument is. Certainly, I'm going to give you another chance. I thought the application for fees in the Court of Appeals was for the work that he did as an attorney for the appeal to the Court of Appeals.
In the first appeal, yes, exactly.
And you're saying he's been awarded fees for.
Yes, and that's why I'm here. He was awarded fees and damages. To get those damages, he should have knocked on a different door for a different category. His client, I don't know, with all respect, money's money, and they should get it if they deserve it. But the court immediately below you, in this cost damage litigation, that's not the one that should have awarded the fees.
Right, and if we reverse...
A different panel of the same court should have awarded them if approached appropriately, with all the respect, that bite wasn't taken. And that is gone.
Well, I think he said that bite wasn't taken because the law in the Ninth District was you can't take that bite.
Here's
isn't that right?
Court, Seth and Gmo don't get super attorney's fees. It's direct damages.
We have to sort that out, obviously. I'm just trying to see what the arguments are.
I didn't mean disrespect like that.
No, I know that.
Against the monster.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.